A couple of years ago, I went to see my physician with what I thought was either a running or a cycling injury. I was having some pain in my left hip and a little discomfort. And he said, it's probably some frayed ligaments, and you ought to probably go see an orthopedist. And I did that and went to see the orthopod, who said, this is pretty common. I think we'll just take a quick MRI just to make sure that we're kind of all on the same page here. So I went through that, which is not a lot of fun. I'm sure some of you have been through this, the clanging thing in the tube and all that. And got home, and at about 4:59 on a Friday night, the phone rang, and it was the orthopedist saying, you have a suspicious mass in your abdomen, and you need to call an oncologist right away. And then he hung up. And I don't know what it is about that kind of news, but it always seems to come at 4:59 on a Friday for some reason. Now, at the time, my wife and I had two children. We still have two children, but at the time, they were they were a year and a half old and about five. And we spent the next month in full panic mode, and some of you may know that feeling. It's not something you want to feel ever, but you certainly don't want to feel it when you've got small children. We spent some time looking around and scrambling, Googling everything in sight, and basically causing ourselves to freak out as much as we could. Ended up on the calendar of a surgeon in New York City who squeezed us in, and the thought was, the consensus was that this is what you call a soft tissue sarcoma, which is a malignant tumor growing out of muscle tissue, and it's not something that you want growing in your abdomen. And it was the size of a baseball. I guess I didn't mention that. So we, after about a month of panicking, we ended up in New York City, and my wife and I were sitting in the waiting room going into surgery. I was all in my scrubs getting ready to go in. And I had the Dalai Lama on the headphones, who was trying to advise me about preparing for this moment. And this wasn't the first time I'd thought about this. I'd spent a little time thinking about mortality, I guess, as everybody does, but never quite so acutely as I was at that moment. And thinking about things like the moment in the house after I'd gotten this diagnosis, my wife and I were very careful not to have conversations with doctors in front of our kids at this time, because we didn't want them to get any more upset than they would just ambiently. So I remember this one moment being outside the house on a cell phone talking to a doctor, looking in the window at my two kids playing on the floor, a year and a half and five, and thinking, what's their life going to be like if I'm not here? And it was an unsettling time. Anyway, as I was in the waiting room in the hospital, my scrubs getting ready with the Dalai Lama kind of helping me get unattached from earthly things, some researchers came in with their clipboards, and they said, we'd like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind. I said, you know, I'm trying to pipe the Dalai Lama right into the mainframe here, okay? Can you just, like... But they said, we'd like to ask you about your exposures to toxic chemicals, synthetic chemicals. And I said, okay. I said, you know, I've had two careers. I've been a journalist and I've been a professor, right? I've moved a lot of paper around. I haven't, you know... I haven't worked in a petrochemical plant somewhere. You know, I've built a couple of canoes. Like, I've worked with fiberglass. Is that what you mean? And they said, no, that's not really it. And they started asking me questions, and these questions were, you know, pages and pages and pages of questions about things. Chemicals that I, at that point, had never heard of. Polybrominated diphenyl ethers, for example. You know, things you've heard of, DDT, BPA, phthalates, arsenic, mercury, flame retardants, stain resistors, Teflon chemicals. I mean, the on and on, the list went on. And I answered as best I could, and they scratched their heads and laughed. And I went into surgery and woke up, I forget what it was, 3 hours later, I suppose. And my wife and my surgeon were at the foot of my bed smiling. And I thought, that's a good sign. They said, you know, it's early to say this for sure, but we think your tumor might have been benign. And I said, you're kidding me. I said, how often does that happen? They said, well, we see about 100 of these a year, and four are benign. And you drew the long straw this time. And I thought, great, that makes me feel good. I've been freaking out for a month, and there was never any problem about this. But because I'm a writer by instinct, I was left with lots of questions. And came home and spent the next 3 years trying to investigate some of the questions that these people had been asking me when I was in the waiting room. And read all the scientific literature, ran around interviewing people, and ended up with a book. The book is called What's Gotten Into Us. And here's what I discovered. It turns out you can get yourself tested for all kinds of synthetic chemicals. They can find things that are in your body right now. And everybody in the room has these things in your body, whether you are aware of it or not. You may be suspicious that you've been exposed to stuff. You may never have thought of it, but it's demonstrable. And I didn't want to get tested myself. My wife and I decided that we'd been through enough. We didn't want to discover that I had 3 dozen carcinogenic chemicals in my body, although I probably do. We'd just rather not know that. You know, we've already been through that once. So I decided to go to a place where people had volunteered for this kind of work, and I went to Maine and interviewed a bunch of people who grew up in some of the most remote parts of the United States and had volunteered to have themselves tested for things. And they were part of what's known as a body burden study, where they discovered they were full of all the things that I've just been mentioning. I came home and I invited a toxicologist to come through my house and go room by room by room and point out things that I ought to be attentive to. He said, you know, the best thing that you can do for someone in a household is take a big plastic garbage bag and take everything in your house and stick it in there, things like your laundry detergents, your cleaning agents, your cosmetics, your pesticides, anything you can spray, stick in a big plastic bag and tie a knot around it. And 3 weeks later, open it up and stick your face in there and see what you're breathing. And that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. He said, if you take your finger and rub it on the windowsill, you can find broken down synthetic chemicals of every kind, not just the stuff that you might know about, things like the phthalates that make your bottle, your crinkly water bottle, pliable, but you can find DDT on your windowsill. And DDT's been banned for 40 years. And you're thinking, how is that possible? He said, well, you know, scientists can find these chemicals on the top of Aconcagua, which is the highest mountain in South America. They can find these chemicals in the bodies of Inuit people in the Arctic. They can find these chemicals in beluga whales in the St. Lawrence River. Beluga whales, by the way, are coming down with breast cancer now. So then I decided to go to Walmart. And kind of go aisle by aisle and just pull stuff off the shelf. And you can do this in any store. It's not just Walmart, of course. It's any store. And look at what's on the labels of things and look at what's not on the labels of things. And you will find, among other things, that you can go to the hardware store and pull off a product. It'll say on the label, warning, this product contains things that are known to be carcinogenic in California. But apparently not in Maryland, you know. But then you can walk across the store to the cosmetics aisle, and if you've done a little research, you know that the same ingredients, the same carcinogenic ingredients are in the cosmetics, but they're not on the label. And the reason they're not on the label is because the cosmetics industry is not required to put them on the label. And then I spent some time investigating drinking water. I paddled the Brandywine River in a canoe and then went through a drinking water plant in Wilmington, and discovered it's not just the pesticides and the petrochemicals running off of parking lots that get into our drinking water. Some of you may have read these stories, but it's things like pharmaceutical drugs. So, for example, you can pull a glass of tap water in Los Angeles and find Viagra in the tap water, which, you know, makes a certain amount of sense. You can get antipsychotic drugs in your drinking water in Philadelphia. Yeah, I kind of feel like they might want to up that dosage a little bit. But that's all in the tap water, and you can trace, you can measure that. And then the last chapter, which is my really self-righteous chapter, was about lawn chemicals. And I have a particular antipathy to lawn chemicals, and especially on things like golf courses. No offense, but there's a whole thing about lawn chemicals in there, too. Just for example, children who were raised on yards that have lawn chemicals are 4 times more likely to develop the kind of tumor, malignant version that I thought I had, than children who were raised on lawns that do not. It's something to think about. So I have one ding left. I'll try to wrap this up. The upshot, of course, is what to do about all this stuff. And the way I think of it is there are sort of 3 things to do. The one is political. Maryland, as you may know, is working on some really interesting chemical regulation. This will never happen at the federal level, by the way. Federal regulation of chemicals is 40 years out of date. Nothing will ever happen. But at the state level, things are happening in Maryland. It's very interesting. Then, of course, there's the whole shopping thing. Like, you can shop your way to a better diet. You can shop your way to better products as well. But the third thing and lastly is kind of going back to the Dalai Lama, which is this idea of being slightly mindful about the way you walk through the world, including the way you walk through the marketplace. And rather than reaching kind of without thinking for products, kind of take a breath and think about what you're looking for, what you think you know about what's in this stuff, who told you, and can you trust them? And it'll give you something to think about. Thanks.